Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Good. Well, guys, we're talking about choosing your location. My name is Derek Puckett, and we planted in Chicago, Illinois, about a year and 3 weeks ago. So we just turned 1 year old. We've been in Chicago for a few years now. Loving our city, loving the place we are. I grew up right around the corner, right across the border, right in Gary, Indiana. I'm going to share a little bit about my story with that, too. So I'm going to just kind of divide this session up a little bit because I'm pretty sure you all have particular questions about your area and things of that nature that you might want to ask. And I'm not going to pretend like I'm going to answer all your questions about your particular area in my presentation. So I'm going to talk about some particular things that I really believe are integral to you actually finding your right location and where you're going. This is a hard topic, and it's very hard to actually pick out where you're going and where you're choosing your location, because as I told some guys yesterday, one of the things when we're talking about choosing location is that we start as church planners, naturally you're thinking about strategizing, you're thinking about systems, you're thinking about what's the next cool thing, you're thinking about what type of people do I best fit with. All these different things are kind of floating through your mind, and as you'll see as you get into the journey, it's very, very easy to keep on that track. You keep this race kind of mentality. And the first thing I think that's very integral to you actually picking your location is prayer. It's prayer. Being on your knees day and night praying, asking God, where would you have me be? I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, but prayer is one thing that we skip over a lot when we're actually church planting. Because we are the guys that charge the hill. We're the guys that are getting it done. We're those type A kind of folks that go out and we figure it out. If anybody can't figure it out, we're going to be those type of guys. But what we kind of fail to do it a lot of times is sit down and pray. And that's where it starts. So this is a picture of my family. When our journey started with prayer, we didn't want a church plant. That wasn't something that we wanted to do growing up. I didn't grow up and say, I want to be a pastor or say, I want to plant a church. That just was not something that I wanted to do. I wanted to be a football player. Was pretty good at it and ended up getting injured. But this is my family. And if you see, I have three beautiful girls and my fine wife who is here with me. It started with prayer because I didn't want to bring them into something that I couldn't provide for my family. It started with prayer because I didn't know the first thing about church planting. And if I'm going to plant a church like any of you guys in here, the only way we're going to build a church is through God. God's the one that's going to build a church. It's his church. So who can take care of the best is God, not us. So that starts with prayer. That's number one. Number two is we have to have a vision from God. So what I want to do is I want to look at some scripture. In Isaiah 6, I'm going to read the passage. You might be familiar with Isaiah 6 and his vision from God. And it's starting in verse 1. If you have a Bible, you can go ahead and bring it out. If not, I'll just read it and you can listen. It says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings. With two he covered his face, and with two he flew, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one called to another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the foundations of the threshold shook in the voice of him who called. And the house was filled with smoke. And I said, woe is me, for I am lost. This is a key verse. For I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King and the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth, and he said, behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, here I am, send me. And he said, go and say this to the people. So I'm going to stop right there. But what you see here is that Isaiah has an encounter with God. that is unusual. Most people don't actually have these encounters with God. But here it is, Isaiah, it has an encounter with God, and he sees this vision. He sees a vision of God. So he has a grand vision that God gives him. And this is when Isaiah is being called in the ministry. Isaiah is being called right here, and he has this vision of God. And I want you to see two things that happen here. So he has a big vision from God. This is a God-sized vision that's not meant for us to actually have, but he sees this vision that's given from God. And what does he say? Immediately, he sees himself. He sees, woe as me. So he says, I'm a sinner. So he sees himself when he sees God, because in the midst of a matchless God, we're nothing. We're unworthy of seeing God. But he sees this vision. But then the part that I think we skip over, I know we've heard this verse, we've seen this a lot more, but he says something here that's very interesting. He says, not only woe is me, but then he says, I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. That's huge. Because Isaiah sees this huge vision from God. He gets the vision, but not only does he see himself, he says, there's a lot of people around me that are also sinners too, that are also in need of seeing this vision, in need of seeing God too. So what am I saying right here? Isaiah sees a vision, number one, but also he has a passion for people. So he sees himself when he sees God, but then he has a passion for the people around him. If you're going to choose your location and you're looking out to where you are, number one, you have to pray. Number two, you have to have a vision given to you from God. And then three, you got to have a passion for the people around you. You have to care for those people. Too many church planters, and we go into cities and we're choosing a cool location. We're choosing this place because there's a lot of people there, or just a hip place to be. Friends, when you move into a city, especially an urban environment, there are many different things that you're going to come in contact with. Chicago is homelessness, the murder rate. You have people that are very successful and they're struggling with that and trying to find their identity in that or other things in society. It's a lot of things in the urban environment that you don't necessarily see outside of that. High school kids that are dropping out, that are running the streets, the gangs inside of that, drugs running rampant in the city. These are things that you come in contact with in an urban setting, and it's on a daily basis. Day one, these are the things that you come in contact with. So when you see all of that, you can't just walk in and say, what's the cool thing to do? Which place do I want to be in? Like, you have to care for these people. You have to care for your city, and that's regardless of where you go. So have a vision from God and care for the people. And this is, in this passage, this is before Isaiah is even cleansed. This is before he actually is saved. He sees God, and in the midst of seeing God, he says, I'm sinful, but there's also people that are just like me out here that need to see the same thing, and they're sinful too. He hasn't been saved yet, which kind of alludes to where I'm going with this. Because what happens next is he saved the seraphim phlegm, and he cleanses his lips, but at the end, God says, who will go for us? Now, it's kind of like God is asking this question, knowing what's going to happen. He asked this question in Isaiah's presence. Isaiah, he knows Isaiah already has a heart for people, already knows that he's sinful. He's cleansed them. Now he says, who's going to go for us? And Isaiah says, here I am, send me. Now, he sends him out. He says, here I am, send me. Now, the interesting thing about this is Isaiah doesn't know what he's signing up for. He doesn't know anything. He just knows that he has a humongous God on his side that has saved him, and he has a heart for people. And then when God tells him to do, basically God is telling him, man, you have to go out. This is a hard message. So what I'm saying is that church plant is not easy, friends. When we go out and we church plant in any city, any setting, it's not easy. What God tells Isaiah to do is that you need to go out and tell the people that were once my people, the covenant people, tell them that now it's only going to be a remnant of them now that's going to be saved. And Isaiah realizes what he has to say. If you look at verse 11, he says, how long do I have to do this, God? And he says, until the people out there look like a stump in the middle of a burnt down forest. That's hard. I mean, he has to go out and tell all these people, some of his friends, some of his family, all the things that they once believed. And now he's telling them, God told me something else. So he's going to do a new work in a new place with all these people. And the only person that's really on his side right now is God. Church plant is lonely, friends, and especially in urban settings and cities where you may not from, and there's a lot of things that are going on around you. I just listed off a lot of them, and there's many other things that I didn't list that the church planter has to deal with besides his location. So when we start looking for our location, when we're thinking about where do we go, it has to start with our prayer. It has to start with God and a vision from God that's bigger than anything that we could even imagine. Number three, we got to have a passion for people. And number four, friends, we got to be available. We have to go when he room we're ready. We have to be sent and called. And the last part, which I haven't talked about, which most of you guys probably wanted to come in and hear about this, was do your research. Like, what does that mean? So how do I actually find my location? How am I going to look at, what do I need to look at, Derek? What are you telling me to go to? You have to do your research. So what I'm going to do is, to share that, I want to share a little bit of our story. I have our vision video here that actually kind of illustrates it and how we actually got to where we are. And I'll elaborate on that afterwards. I wanted to share that with you because along with what I'm talking about, it gives you a little bit more practicality to what I'm saying. Because as you can see in the video, it wasn't a vision that just came from me. It was something where I grew up in Gary, Indiana. A little bit about Gary, it was the murder capital of the world when I was growing up. 16% literacy rate here in the city. So a lot of people don't make it out of Gary. It's three things in the city that you usually do if you're a young man. And that's either you're good at sports, you're good at academics, or you actually run the streets. I did a little bit of all of them, but ended up going to high school in Indianapolis around 12. And that's where it kind of shifted with our vision, because I didn't know Jesus growing up. My mother worked two or three jobs some of the time. So when we went to church, it was when she felt like it, because Sunday was her day off. So when I went to high school from Gary, I was leaving Gary and went to Indianapolis. I went to a college prep high school in Indianapolis where I was like the only black guy in the school. I was really good at sports. So I had to learn what it meant to be a minority in a majority context. And Gary, it was really everybody around me looked the same. So I knew what that actually meant. I thought I was a majority because everybody around me looked the same. We did the same things. I tell people as a joke that Katie Couric was my best white friend because that's the person I knew on TV. It was Katie Couric. So I liked to watch her. But when I got to high school, it was this rift between the two. You had black and white. And for me, you have folks that were coming to school that were driving Beamers and BMWs to school, and I'm driving a beat up hand-me-down that maybe my grandmother didn't want to use that day. So I got to drive to school one day. But because I was coming from this impoverished background, and they're coming from this kind of high-end background, successful, and they're still searching for things, I'm still searching for hope and what I am, we kind of met in the middle. It was this hopelessness there where we all could kind of meet together. And a lot of those guys are my friends to this day, black and white. So I felt like God was really kind of in my story before I actually knew him, and just implanting this DNA of something larger than just my own demographic. And seeing it from the seashore, I felt like it was a sea growing up in Gary, but the lake, seeing it from the lake, seeing Chicago, and saying, man, that's huge. Didn't really care about the murder rate because that's what I was experiencing every day. But the lights in Chicago and riding down Lakeshore Drive just blew my mind. It was bigger than I could ever experience. So it was always a dream. Went to high school and got there. And when we went to college, I met her right before we went to college. And she shared her walk with me, introduced me to a guy who led me to Christ when I was about 18 years old, and I went to college and was going to play football there. Ended up getting injured my first year and went straight into ministry. As I said in the video, it was the Campus Crusade ministry. I was the only black guy in the room, 400 students in there, only black guy in the room again. And I loved what they were teaching, loved what they were talking about. I could even get with the worship a little bit, but there was nobody in the room that looked like me. So I said, man, there's got to be something on this campus for people other than that are in this room. And we began to pray, and God challenged me to start this ministry called Impact. And I was like, there's no way I'm starting another branch of Campus Crusade that reaches out to African Americans, because that's just defeating the purpose. I was like, I want to start a ministry where we can do all this together. Like, this is the body of Christ, right? If it's the body of Christ and we move it to heaven and be together, why can't we do this on earth? We ended up starting this ministry with the intention of linking the two together. And it blew up. The ministry blew up. They started discipling us. I was living in the house with four white guys that were leading Campus Crusade, and they were pouring into me and my wife, and we started that ministry with Impact. But to this day, they still do everything together on campus, and it's been a highlight for Campus Crusade in terms of what they want to see on their campuses throughout the nation. So that happened there. I was preaching every week since I was 19. Didn't want to preach. And I started going to church when I was 16, and would drive there by myself, and
the dude, they saw a black guy coming to church, young black man, and they were happy, so they put me in the pulpit. And I read the sermon and pray every Sunday, and didn't know what I was talking about. When we got to college, though, and I actually started leading this ministry same way. Nobody taught me. I was just reading the scriptures and saying, this is what the word says. Let me preach. And people were getting saved, and God was doing a great work on that campus. And after we graduated, we went on staff of Crusade in the inner city of Indianapolis. And we were there and still had this same dream of seeing the city come together with campus ministries, with colleges, with high schools and churches in the city. We were able to develop a new plan there. But in that process is when this whole vision of church plant came. I didn't want a church plant. I didn't want a pastor. But folks had known what we had done. I've been speaking for a while, and a few guys and my walk really just challenged me on church planting. And said, man, you need to plant a church. You need to do this. This is what God has called you to do. And for 2 years, we just prayed for 2 years. And I said, let's do it. She was like, no. And 6 months after that, she came to me with tears in her eyes and said, let's do it. And at that time, I didn't want to plant a church, which I think now, once we say yes and we were going to go down that route, what we did, the first thing we did was preparation. Like, I applied to a program. I don't know if any of you guys are in programs with church planting, where people are actually mentoring and kind of teaching. I don't think we should church plant now without that, honestly. There's no reason for us to jump out and reinvent the wheel when folks have been doing it for years and we can get taught by them. So I did that at a church called Fellowship Memphis in Memphis, Tennessee. It's a church that's about 2,500 people, multi-ethnic. The lead pastor there was Brian LaRitz and John Bryson. And they had been doing it for 10 years or so. And they said, why don't you come down here? We'll pay for your education. We'll train you up and we'll send you to Chicago, because that's where I wanted to go. A lot of the students that were in our ministry in college, they were from that Chicago Gary area. So it just continued to come up. So when we thought church planting, everything clicked to say, we got to go back to Chicago. This is where we got to go. Childhood, high school, college, it's always coming back up. And we went to Memphis, and they were doing it there, this gospel-centered, multi-ethnic, disciple-making church. And we said, this is exactly what we want to have. And we went to the city. And when we got there, the first thing, and I think if you're going to move to a location, or if you're trying to figure out which city you're going to be in, the first thing you have to be is a student of that city. You have to, don't come in like you know everything, but come in asking questions, meeting with people. Although I had never lived in Chicago proper, so I sat down with everybody I could, coffee shops, pastors, asking them, what does Chicago need? If a new church plant were to start here, what does people need? Number one, people told me it was renewal. That's where we came up with our name. They said the city needs renewal. So we came up with renewal. The other thing people said is we need a place to fellowship. We need a place to connect. So we started doing connection things at my house, where we'd have food, we have worship nights, we have prayer nights. But it was a time for people to come together, commune, and fellowship. Because if you know anything about our city, it's a fast-paced moving city. So people go to work, and then they come back home. They live in these communities where their neighborhoods are made up of their school systems. They have parks there. They have grocery stores. People don't have to leave their neighborhood. It's not like New York or anything. This is like we don't have to leave our neighborhoods. We can stay in our neighborhoods and do everything we want to do there. The only time people really leave is if they have to go to work. But the problem is, once you get back to your neighborhood, people don't really communicate with each other. People don't talk to one another. They might live in the midst of, because we have high rises or three-story buildings that we live in, but people don't necessarily get to know each other. So we said, man, we have to figure out a place. How do we get people to know each other? And we started doing that in people's homes around the city. It wasn't necessarily a Bible study, but this is what people were saying they needed in the city. And that's what we started doing. So being a student of the city. Also, what that meant for us was looking at maps of the city. So this is a map of Chicago. And we looked at the city, and Chicago was 77 different neighborhoods with 220 different micro neighborhoods. And in each one of those is what I told you. They have their own parks, they have their school systems, they have grocery stores, they have different people groups, which I'm about to show you in a minute.
But people are very, when it comes to their neighborhood, they're very prideful about their neighborhood. I'm from this neighborhood. I'm from this street. This is where I'm from. So you have to know where you are in Chicago when you're thinking about planting. Most of the people move to Chicago and they plant on this side, the north side, which is, which I'm about to show you, is mostly white in Chicago. So people plant there because most of the planters moving to Chicago, or most of the planters nowadays are white. It's, you don't see too many multi-ethnic or ethnic folks planting churches, so people move this way because that's where they feel like they can relate to people. Now this map right here is what messed my heart up. This is the city of Chicago right here. If you see, it's color-coded because it's a demographic map of the city. The blue is African-American. This yellow or orange is Hispanic. This red is white. This green, if you can see right here, is kind of that's Asian. So it's 34% white, 33% black, 27% Hispanic, 9% Asian, and others in there. That's what they kind of say. So whoever else is in the city. But this messed my heart up because if you see, it's divided. I mean, it's very divided. And this is, if you drive through the city, it's city, it's streets in there. They call it Red Line. And they the real estates did this a long time ago where you, they didn't really sell to a particular people past one level, or they only sold this way. So there's streets. He said north. There's a street called Western. There's this thing called West of Western. You go past West of Western, you're going into the part of the city of Chicago you don't want to go into. It's like that all throughout the city. So these are things that I had to know going into the city, because it's the most divided racially, socioeconomically, city in America. And it's not because people don't want to be around each other. Systemically, it's divided. So you have neighborhoods where it's only one people group. And they might be right next to or a street away from another neighborhood that's going to change as soon as you go across the street. They didn't necessarily do that. That's historically known about Chicago. So we said, if we're going to come to a city like this, what's the best place where we could actually speak to the city and be for the city and not just be in the city, but be for the city and be a church that's going to bring multiple people together, and hopefully that dividing wall of hostility falls, because we believe the gospel is the only thing to do that. So we saw this map, we saw the other map, we talked to other people, we said, okay, right around this area, you can see all of them kind of come together in that area. So we chose right around the United Center. It was other areas. You have a pocket down here, which is Hyde Park, but outside of Hyde Park, it's not diverse at all. And up here is Rogers Park. It's a little diversity up there, but that's more international diversity. It's not necessarily native Chicagoans and people like that. Still need the gospel there, but we chose right here. And we also prayed about it. And as we rode through it, literally to this day, it's still, there's a passion that burns in my heart saying this is where we need to be. We want to plant churches all throughout the city, but we said, where can we start that's going to speak not only to our DNA, but what's going to speak to the DNA of the city? How can we reach this city? And we started here. There's train lines that come in through the United Center. There's buses that come there. Everybody knows where that is in the city, so it made sense to speak to the city from that area. So that's where we started, in the city. And that's kind of our story of planting the church there. So there's five steps I really believe, and I want to just open this up for questions and talk about your particular areas. But five steps: you have to pray. You have to pray hard. You have to have a vision from God. And number three, you have to have a passion for the people, all the people, not just one type of people, but all the people in the city. And number four, you have to be sent or called. I believe you really have, this has to be something that's not just you jumped up and said, I want to plant a church in this area, but there needs to be multiple people around your life that are saying, this is for you. This is what I've seen you be doing in your life, and I believe this is what God has called you to do. And then lastly, you need to do your research. Don't do your research first. That's putting the cart before the horse. Do your research last. That should be the last thing. You're always going to do that as a church planter. Research, strategize, all those things are going to come. So there's different resources that you can use. This is from like citydata.com, if you guys heard of that. CityData, you can pull up everything you need up on your city, demographics, single moms in the area, who's living there, the medium income, all of that you can find on citydata.com. There's many other things. Google is amazing. I'm pretty sure if you were church planting 30 years ago, you're probably mad that Google's around now, but you can use Google. So there's many different resources that you can come in and look at that.
But and there's books too out the wazoo, but nothing can tell you about your city and the calling to that city in this Bible. It's Jesus. I know one of the questions a lot of people ask is, man, do I have to be a particular person to plant in a particular area? No, I really don't believe so. Jonah did not want to go see the Ninevites. Jesus, God made him go. You know, the same thing here in Isaiah. He's a Jewish or Israelite, and he's like, I don't want to do this, God. But God sends him. So there was a principle, growth principle, more homogenous growth principle that was put in place a long time ago, where if you look like this certain type of people, you go minister to that type of people. Now, you can do that, but if you're going to plant in an urban setting, that's not necessarily who your neighbors are. That's not who the people are around you. So it's not necessarily a homogenous people group. So specifically to an urban setting, that can't be your growth principle if you want to really reach the city. So with that said, I don't believe you have to be a certain type of person to actually plant in a person, in a place. So with that, I just want to open it up and see if you guys have any questions. I know you guys are planting in different areas.
Yeah, so kind of like for someone even younger who doesn't have a specific area in mind, like how do we know where the place we want to plant partners with where God wants us to plant?
How do you know if the place you want to plant is the place where God wants you to plant? I don't know. At the end of the day, that's not something that I know. that's something that's it's through prayer. And there's a lot of things that align up too. For me, it was affirmation from other brothers around me. It was also a passion in my heart that I believe that God had laid there since I was a kid. Some people may not have been a kid. When I went to the church I was in Memphis, he just wanted to plant a gospel-centered, multi-ethnic church that made disciples. And he had three. It was Chicago, Birmingham, or Detroit. And a guy came to him and said, man, you need to check out Memphis. It's Martin Luther King shot there. The leader of Ku Klux Klan is on the next corner. Like, it's a statue of him. You need to check out Memphis. And he rode over the bridge going into Memphis, and his heart was like, this is it. So I really believe that there are people that are around you that will help you with that, as well as God will do the same thing. So I can't tell you what that's going to look like for you. I do think you're doing the right thing and you need to make steps towards that and look into it, doing your research. So it's a good question, though.
Do you live near where you planted? Or
yeah, I live less than a mile away from the church, so. Depending on your city's context, that's going to be pretty huge. In my city, because of the neighborhood system and how people are prideful about their areas, it was pretty huge for us to live around the church, at least beginning. Now, we have people that live all over the city, which is what we wanted. But for us, we live right around the church. That might change, though.
Just like to hear your response to, we're looking at a third place, but we're looking and thinking not so much location as locations, mm-hmm. meaning the kind of space you need, or depends on what you want to do with it in your first year, yeah. may be different in your third year,
yeah.
may be different in your fourth year. And so in the city to say, this is the place, this has to be the place. So we're looking at storefronts.
Yep.
For example, at the beginning, right, to have some public visibility, to have a meeting space, and it would take us to a certain point, but then God blesses it and there's something more. So to be thinking about being flexible and adaptable, having a hunch
yep.
of what to do at the beginning, do you think in those kind of terms of this season of planting,
yep.
you may need this kind of place and spot, but we may need to move it 2 miles down the road,
yeah, that's
3 years down the road?
That's a great question. So I think as a church planner, you need to have a huge vision. So you have to start with this huge vision, but you don't sacrifice the huge vision for the practical. So practicality of the huge vision is, I'm in my first year. I don't need a humongous church that everybody from the city is going to come to. I need a church where it's going to see maybe 100 to 200 people, where it's going to feel full if it's 70 or 80 people in this room, which may be a storefront. It may be, we meet in a place called Kitchen Chicago. It's a shared banquet hall. And we have
100 to 150 people that come. But it didn't start that way. So, but we were able to grow into it. Now it's time for us to actually find another place. But we started there knowing that this will work in the first year. But in order for us to grow, we can't stay there. So, and the other thing is, I don't know if your city is like ours. Your city is. Yeah. But if you're going to, like in this city, especially in those first years, if I moved our church from here down to here, it's going to mess the whole, it's going to mess our whole church up. So it's going to change the whole dynamic of our church to move it to the south side of Chicago or the north side. Now, if I do that in year seven, that's totally different. Because in year seven, we're hopefully by that time, we're a large enough church to where we can hopefully have a campus here and a campus there. So it doesn't change the DNA. So I think as a church planner, it can be so easy to forget your huge vision and go here, and that becomes your vision. So you got to have, keep the huge vision, but also have the practical of saying we got to stay here in this place, and this is our 1 to 3 year, like you said. After 3 to 3 years, it's 3 to 5 year plan. So going into it, I had to, through my residency and assessments, I had to do like a 5 year plan, a 1 year plan, 10 year plan, those things. If you haven't done that, I think that's a great thing for you to do. And hold on to it. One thing I didn't say is that vision that you get, you want to hold on to that. I watched this video numerous amount of times, and each time it brings tears to my eyes because it's a really a vision I believe that God has given us, and it's coming to fruition in our city. So it's God doing something there. So hold tightly to that vision, but know that there are steps along the way to see that thing come true. So you need brothers around you, if you don't already, that will speak hard truths to you, that are also in this walk with you. Because church planting is the loneliest thing you will do in your life, but it's also the greatest thing you can do. It's the hardest thing too. But you need brothers around you that will speak truth to tell you, you're just in year one. I don't know how many times I heard that throughout my first year. I'm like, man, we gotta do this, we need to do this, we need to go here. He's like, man, you're in year one. Deal with the people. That's your job right now. Be with your people. And that's what it is. If you're in a house or a storefront, you need to be with the people and really establish that strong foundation and that core. Now, if your church goes to another level, like my friend Albert Tate, who's in LA, he's seeing 1,500 people in his first year. That's not normal for most people. You don't get you have to pull back. Then you're trying to figure out what to do with that. So that's a different thing. So if you have that, that's a different level of church planting. It's not a church plant anymore often. So, any other questions? Hopefully that helps. So you're still in the house right now?
Yeah.
It's a core group?
Yeah.
More so? I would. So, and you're in the city, right? Urban context, it seems, sounds like some things are going around. So, what I would say is what we did, we moved to the city, we had about 25 to 30 people with us, but we didn't launch really for another year on purpose, because the first year we had to raise money. And numerous people in my life said, you can start now if you want, but you don't have any money, you're not going to be able to keep it up. So in our context, Chicago, we had to raise $1 million. So we raised $1 million, and that gave us enough space to build out a five-year plan, where myself as the church planner didn't have to worry about my salary and working at other places and things like that, and I could actually focus on the actual church itself. And in that budget, we built out location, things of that sort. So my advice would be to pray with your people, but also talk to them and tell them what's going on, and saying we need to step back and we need to take some time to raise money. Now, it might not be a year, it might be 6 months, but you need to raise money. If you're going to be in the urban, it's totally different than being in more of a, not that church planting in the suburb is not, but in the city, you have to have money in order to be able to operate. And before you move there or you do anything, you need to raise some money. And there are churches that really would come alongside that would love to be a part of that. So that would be my advice. Now, it's probably not, because you guys have already won, you're already beginning. So, but I would say if that core group's locked in, you know, have them buy into that, and also pray with them and say, this is what we're going to do for our church to go to the next level. So that's what I would say.
Yeah.
also
don't
to
move
get,
if that's where you want to be.
Get out in the community, and you're seen as a fellowship that's more concerned about the community than yourself. People are going to want to help you.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll be surprised what doors open up when they say, these people are real, really care about us. And
that's good.
I'm using my building on Sunday. Maybe I'll let them use it. YMCAs or another place.
There's a number of older churches in our community,
yeah,
in our neighborhood that are,
yeah,
like six people left in, and they're like, we don't know why they have services still, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
so,
where we are, too. Yeah, so exactly what he said, get in the community. I'd say raise money, because that's, yeah, it's the huge things to do in a city. So.
Did you guys go by yourselves, or did you take a team with you?
We had three. So when we actually moved there, it was us, another couple, and another guy. And they were all from our other church. Now, that didn't happen on purpose. It was, it's all God's story in itself. We actually were going to say we were going to plant there. Then the other guy with his wife, who actually became my kind of associate pastor, he got a full ride to a school there to do his PhD, so he was coming too. And then the other guy I grew up with since I was 12, so that one was on purpose. We were kind of intentional in that. We knew that we'd go plant this church together. So those are the three that were with us. About in that first year, I was preaching in many places as I could, as well as going around this country to raise money through the networks that I was a part of. So we did that, and through that, that was huge because we had about 30 to 40 people that moved to the city in June of 2014 that moved from all over the country to come to this church plant. And that was back in June. We launched in September. We did preview service and things through the summer. So we built up a core of about 50 people. 50 strong people to start with. Now, our core is not the same now. Those folks started with us, and even a couple of pastors aren't, they're different places. One guy's going back to our church in Memphis. So they started with us, and then we kind of cut over really, really quickly in the first 6 months or so. So it really was, no, we didn't move there with 25 people off the back. We had six or five of us, I think, minus our kids. So that's, if you can build up a core before you can go, I think that's a great way to do it for sure. If you can't, then you have to grind it out. You need to get on the ground, get to know as many people as you can, speak as many places as you can, even if it's to, you asking the pastor, can I get a group of your adults after church or something like that? Raise as much money as you can before you start. Because once you start, you can't, it's hard to go back and try to raise money. It's hard to go back and try to build up a core group. Once you start getting those Sunday to Sundays, you're going. And you could always wait longer to start. You can't start over. Yeah, so it's that's a hard thing to hear. As a church planner, that was very hard for me to hear. But one of the best advice I had was to wait a year and do as much as you can in that year and then start. So... Do you have a core group that's going with you, or do you
start? We're starting to develop that.
Okay.
We have a couple more.
Yeah, take your time. Like, I think our first year, looking at it now, was really just, we had a lot of people coming, but out of that, we had about a 50 or so that I said, this is our core. And I was able to do a leadership thing with them to train them up. And now they're actually running with it in year two. So if you can do a lot of that on the front end, it's much better for you.
I'd just like to, if there's anybody else in the room afterwards, to link up with somebody. One of the things that we had an eye out for in Chicago, as you were describing, you described it very well, is that there's a lot of turf. People are on their own turf, but there are the seams where those neighborhoods connect.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain intersections or certain streets, and I think most cities have these, where everybody can feel comfortable, right? You
yep.
go into a restaurant and you're going to see that kind of mix,
mm-hmm.
not just at a United Center for an event, but on an everyday basis,
oh, yeah.
people will go to a pancake house or whatever it is, and you're going to see like the real cross section. And so looking for those kind of sociological seams where everybody feels they belong and feels like plausibly that's their spot too.
Yeah.
And we were able to have a spot in Chicago, and we've got real diversity at that site, and we're looking for those. And I'd just like to hear if that's part of your vision and the people we're trying to reach and to see that represented in our church. Planning inside any of those neighborhoods in Chicago, you're going to get one kind of person.
Right.
Because people are not going to cross those kind of people groups. They don't go there normally. They don't. Mm-hmm. They're not going to feel like it's their place. They're going to have to behave differently when they
right.
go. And I don't know if other people kind of think along those lines, or you've got places in your own towns that you're looking for. I'd love to. And then how do you find those spots?
Yeah.
And they're usually expensive.
Exactly. Yeah, and you're right. It's part of doing your research and really kind of figuring out, like, it's this language of finding out what are the idols of the city. What do people love in the city? Chicago, younger generation coming, they love coffee shops. They love good breakfast spots. They love the football, the basketball. They love anybody in Chicago loves sports. So figuring out what are those idols that make this city go in that and usually you can figure out around that area where people are actually moving in and things of that sort. There are many streets, like he was saying, that you can, if you can get something on that street where people actually, it's a common area. For us, I didn't show you, but on that, if I moved our church three streets or maybe five streets west of where we are, no white people would probably come to our church. Let's just say that. So right where we are, now the black people would come because we're actually in the black, it would be a black neighborhood. So we're right here. If we moved over here, which is right, East Garfield Park is all pretty much all black. White people are not coming to the west side of Chicago unless they're going to the Garfield Conservatory there. It's just not a place where they go. And if they do, it's more of like an outreach and we're going back home. So, I mean, I'm just being honest. So now black people will come this way because they're used to going that way. They'll come this way. Same thing with Hispanics in the area. They'll come that way because a lot of them work in that area. So what we did is we tried to find a place, like you were saying, a common area where people are all, they all kind of come to and they're okay. Now, the United Center 10, 15, 20 years ago, that was not that way. Now it's totally different. It's changing a lot. But we had to figure out where is that place? Where is that place in the city? But also not catering everything to that. So you got to have the vision of knowing where you want, what do you want to see in the city. So we saw that demographic map and things like that before we actually went to the city. So we were praying on it, God, what's the vision you have for us? In this city, and I knew multi-ethnic gospel center, that was way before I said we're going to plant a church. So I do believe you have to have a vision before you actually jump into the city. So what's your vision? You get there. Now God can do that different ways. You might be living in the city for years, and then God's like, I want you to be here, but you've been there for a while, and you're saying, I know what this city runs off of. I know what type of church this is going to be. I have a brother in the city that just started a church by doing Bible studies in his living room. He wasn't planning on starting a church. And now it's a big house church movement in the city. So God reveals it to you in different ways. But you do have to have some type of vision of what does it look like to start where you are and what is God giving you. So if it's in the house and that's what you guys are doing right now, and it's more kind of Bible study and fellowship in the community, he keeps doing that. But it's also, if we want this to be bigger than this and we want to have a church, there's things we got to do. We got to get in the community. We got to raise some money. And that's something that the people need to know because they also can help with that. So you got to know your context and you have to do your research. But like he said, that's, and every city's different. If you're in Los Angeles, you're not, this isn't Los Angeles. And it's way more spread out than Chicago is. So you have to know your city, be a student of it.
Can I ask you something?
Yes. Now, right here, it's a little more mixed income because this is University of Chicago area, Hyde Park. So some of the professors there are African American. You also have, that's where President Obama's from, that area. So the well-to-do black folks in the city kind of move in that area. It's also a little pocket down here, Beverly. So it's
Flossmoor, more of a suburb. So you find little pockets, but most of the folks that are in city proper is more lower income. And this map looks a little, this is 2010. It looks a little different now. And it's going to be a lot more red in this area. Let's just say that, because a lot of people are moving back to the city that were once out here. They're moving back in, and these folks are moving out or getting pushed out.
Why is that happening?
It's called gentrification. So gentrification basically is, you know, so you guys heard white flight and things of that nature. So you had, and Chicago's known for this real estate scheme. They would come in and they would say it was a majority white area. They would say, man, it's a black family moved down the street from you. You know, once they move in, there's going to be a lot more of them move in. So they would move out. And this is what happened in the neighborhoods. And now Chicago became historically a black and brown city. But now what's happening is a lot of folks that were living in the suburbs or even not in Chicago or in Illinois are moving to this. It's attractive to move to the city now. Like I said, your New York's, your Chicago's, your LA, it's big cities. People want to live in the city. So they're moving into the city and they're raising taxes up. They're raising up a lot of different things where these folks that once lived here, maybe they even have a house, but they can't pay the taxes anymore on the house. The taxes is double their what they pay for the house. So it's like you can't pay for the house anymore, you have to move. They also gave people vouchers. Here's a voucher, go live out in the suburb. We want to buy your house from you. So it's a lot of different things that happen. And there's the saying in Chicago, if Chicago wants it, Chicago gets it. So it's really like, it's, so you got to be for your city and for kind of neighborhood development and things of that nature, and not just about coming. That what this is more, it's just driven, it's money. It's like we need to get money in the city, we need people to move in to actually contribute in that way. So as a church, you have to come in and figure out how do we actually, we know what's going on here in the city on a mass scale, but how do we actually reach these people here? And we deal with that. It's a good question, because right around the United States, that's happening in a big way. So myself, I'm still looked at as a young buck, even though I'm the black guy with a church. The older black churches are saying, you're the young buck, you still want to push us out. What do you want to do here? And I'm like, no, I honor the history. But it's a long process of just building with these people and building with the community there and knowing them, letting them know that you're not here just for a short period of time, but you're here to for the long haul and want to see this city change. So, yeah, it's happening in a lot of cities across the nation. You probably maybe experienced that where you are a little bit, so.
When you're when like the 25 to 50 people who moved, did you tell them like, hey, we should all live in this neighborhood where we're planning the church, or was it pretty? Did people just you tell them wherever and they kind of moved around the city?
The people that were moving were moving to the city, I told them to. They asked me. I said it's probably best for you to live around where we are right now, because this is going to be your community for the most part. And I also told them, after a few years or so, after you know the city, our vision is to be for the city and be bigger than just where we are, so we would like you to move out. So some people are actually already doing that. The thing about Chicago is that you don't have to buy a house, and most people can't afford buying a house when they move to the city, so rent a house for a year and get to know the area. That allows you to build up some community, and then you can move out from there. So our people are actually, after a year of being there, actually starting to move out different places now that we have different small groups and things like that around the city. So, but the beginning, yeah, I think it's important. My wife will really say that, you know, living down the street from another one of our girlfriends that moved to the city is new, and you can walk to each other with kids, it's very important. So. All right, we got a few more. If you have any more last questions, if not.
I have one more question. Was the United Center a part of your vision that this was a place? Was that the stadium a part of that when you were saying, like, that the idols of your city or sports or those kind of, did that play into that decision at all, too? Or?
Yeah, I mean, the United Center, so anybody in here Bulls fans?
All right, Bulls fan. Michael Jordan, fan of Michael Jordan? No, maybe so. All right, Michael Jordan. So the late 90s, even to this day, I mean, Michael Jordan was just an idol in the city. I mean, everybody loved Michael Jordan. The United Center was a place where he made history. And not only there, Chicago Stadium was right there around the same area. And now what's happening is the Blackhawks are making history. So you have, and that's at United Center. So you have all of that happening right there where people just know that. So if I say United Center, pretty much anywhere I go, usually people know, oh, that's Chicago. And they may have been to a game before. So, and anywhere in Chicago, if I talk to people, they know exactly where the United Center is. So it's not a place where people have to find. They can figure out exactly how to get there. They know that it's a train that goes there, things of that nature. So we knew, and it's not just Chicago, it's the Cubs. I mean, you got diehard Cubs fans, diehard Bears fans. We're not that good this year. I love the Bears, but I, you know, just diehard fans. It does not matter. And in the 90s, nobody really liked the Blackhawks, but everybody loves the Blackhawks now. So it's sports in our city. It's one of the things that the city runs off of. So,
the different directions.
Oh, and the different directions. Yeah, I didn't say that. So that's a good thing. So if you see right around here, United Center, I like to tell people any cardinal direction you go away from the United Center, you get a different demographic of people. So you go to the south, you get more Asian population. You go to the north, it's primarily kind of hipster, I would say, white and Hispanic. To the east, it's white, but it's upper class, I would say. It's West Loop. And to west of that is African American. So that's, and United Center is dead in the middle, so it's just right like a good middle to meet.
Do a lot of people live near the United Center, or is it less concentrated because the stadium's right there?
It's a lot of people that actually live right around the United Center. So there is parking lots and things like that, but there's a lot of, we have high-rise buildings, we have mid-rises, people, it's a lot of people that live right around there. Okay. So they're walking distance to their houses. So that might not be for some of you all context. It might be just downtown in the middle of, but even downtown Chicago, a lot of people live there. I wouldn't tell you that's the place to plant a church in Chicago. So, yeah. That's about our time. People are starting to leave. So if you have any other questions you want to talk to me afterwards, I'll be around for a little bit. Let me pray for us, and hope you guys have a good time here at Exponential. Father God, thank you so much for this time. Thank you for who you are, God. We thank you for being a great God, God, that would place visions on our heart and place dreams on our heart. God, I pray that you would walk with each one of the families and individuals in this room as they're thinking about planting churches, God. We thank you that that's a way to reach your people, God, and that you're bringing people to churches all around the nation, and God, that we're continually being able to start a new work. God, we know you do great things there, so we just pray, Lord, that our visions and our dreams would most of all line up with yours for our cities and for our families, God. Allow us to take steps back and ask, what do you want for us, God, and what is it that you would have us do? So, God, I just pray that as we're contemplating locations, that we would most of all look for your direction. Let us have a great time here, God, and let us learn from other practitioners and people that are here, Lord. We thank you and we pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.